Hello and welcome to the British Chambers podcast channel. We're delighted to bring you a second season of in-depth discussions and conversations with our members and high-profile speakers, ranging from topics like trade, fintech, arts, sports, and more within Singapore, ASEAN, and the UK. Thank you for your support, and we hope you enjoy today's podcast. Hello and welcome to our listeners. My name is David Kelly and I'm the Executive Director here at the British Chamber of Commerce in Singapore. This year has been another year that we won't forget, but there is still good reason to celebrate great business success. For the second year running, the pandemic has forced us to transform our annual awards ceremony into a live and interactive online event, and there was no doubt that we would continue to uncover stories of success and inspiration from across the network, and we were not disappointed. As the longest running awards initiative by an international chamber of commerce in Singapore, join me as we find out more about our winners and their initiatives that saw them as the winners this year. I'm delighted to be welcomed for today's podcast by three of our award winners. We have Andy Marr, Managing Director at 8Build, who won the winners of the Consumer Service Provider of the Year Award. We have Aicha, the Singapore Diversity and Inclusion Committee Lead for Arup Singapore, winners of our D&I Champion of the Year Award, and Tan Yun Heng, Singapore Office Leader, also at Arup, winners of our Employer of the Year Award. So let's get into it. And with wellbeing and customer care as the main topics of conversation for today, I couldn't be joined by a better set of winners. It's been a difficult time for many, but many guests have made it a mission to protect and uplift their businesses and the community and the network. So firstly, to all three of you, a huge congratulations and a real warm welcome to you. Andy, perhaps if I can start with you, congratulations on behalf of 8Build for being announced the winner of our Customer Service Provider of the Year Award. And just to start with, it'd be great to get a bit of an overview of 8Build and why you entered the awards in the first place.
Yeah, thanks, David. So for us, 8Build, we're a specialist fit-out contractor. We founded the business in 2005 from an idea that eight friends, who were actually known each other for 25 years, had in the Curry House in London. We questioned kind of what's wrong with our industry, you know, particularly the construction industry. And we said, is it efficient? Is it enjoyable? Does it achieve maximum value of money for our clients? Should we seek to do things differently? And is there an alternative? I think by the time main course was served, I think the answer to all those questions was a no. So the collective of eight started 8Build. So in 2008, we wanted to expand the business overseas after 3 years in business in London. So as one of the eight and having family ties in Singapore and previously worked here, I set up the office in 2010 as our kind of APAC regional base. With what we strongly believe in, which is our kind of bespoke white glove service, we entered the awards to elevate our recognition and our position in the market. And I think this has been achieved even from when we, you know, went in as an entrant to being a finalist and now the winners of the Customer Service Provider of the Year. This has been so good for us. We're really, really pleased. So a big thank you to BritCham.
Oh, absolutely super. And a super story as well. And Andy, I've got the privilege of already knowing you, but just for our listeners, you must have had to invest time and care into ensuring your staff are happy and set up to represent the brand at a very high standard. Can you just talk to our listeners about some of those initiatives that you've sort of put into place at 8Build that's helped you sort of to develop your staff?
So investing in our 8Build, as we affectionately call our staff, it's really important to us that we give that investment. So we treat them, everyone is like an ambassador, particularly for our project deliverers. But working for a UK business, there's got to be some consistency across the offices. Mm. And that's particularly prevalent with the kind of incentives and opportunities we offer. So for us, this includes equity shareholding opportunities for staff, annual leave that matches that of the UK, travel opportunities to travel to our business in the UK and spend some time with them. All of our ops team have done that and actually taken family members with them, which has been great. Wow. And also the opportunity to work overseas and for our workers, housing them in non-dormitory accommodation, which I think has been really important during this COVID. So you like to think happy staff. Our mission is to treat others as we expect to be treated ourselves. So hopefully it's a case of practicing what we preach.
Oh, brilliant. And you made a really interesting point in your submission around personal development plans. And you said that it does not always necessarily imply upward movement. Rather, it's about enabling individuals to improve their performance and reach their full potential at each stage of their career. Really, really powerful statement, Andy. Can you just dive into what that really means in terms of the development of 8Builders and how that sort of supported the business?
Okay, for a construction company, our biggest asset really is our staff, our 8Builders. So our final product's a bit cliche. Our final product is only as good as the 8Builders who deliver those projects. So staff retention is really, really key, particularly in a market where in the construction industry in Singapore, it appears the norm that many kind of move around. And we're not too sure whether that's, you know, staff progression or career progression or whether their kind of recognition isn't fulfilled. So we want our 8Builders to have a real solid career path ahead of them. And we promote all of them to have a kind of 5-year look ahead of where they want to be and how we can best support that to fill their aspirations. So for some of them have got lofty aspirations and wanted to reach for the sky and really go for it. But some others, yeah, they just want to be best in class for their role, which is fair enough. And maybe some actually look at a job role within the business, kind of diversifying and doing something different. But for us, it's all about staff retention and keeping them in the business. So we're really, really passionate about supporting this. And we regularly meet up with our staff to monitor personal development against the goals that we set.
Oh, it's really great to hear. And you mentioned previously around how you offer equity opportunities for your 8Builders as well. I mean, that's really great in terms of getting your staff to buy into the organisation, which must sort of help with that sort of customer service piece as well. Can you sort of just explain a little bit more around that dynamic and why you decided to do that with the organisation?
Yeah, so for us, being offered, you know, almost like skin in the game as such, without that kind of financial investment, it's quite a liberating and emotional thing to share and quite unique for us as a business. So providing our ops team an active part in how we operate the business has really changed the dynamics of how we operate and pave, and this also kind of helps pave their career path ahead. So empowerment for the ops team, you know, to be masters of their own destiny whilst providing true representation at board levels is, we think, is the really right thing to do. So we want to be an international business, but we want to operate locally. So this is really important to us.
Really excellent. And certainly over the last couple of years, it's felt like, you know, sort of looking after your customers has been absolutely key, right? I mean, you know, really having that contact time, really being able to deliver on projects through, you know, a number of industries have been sort of disrupted, certainly over the last couple of years more broadly. How have you been able to maintain such a high level of customer service? Are there sort of nuggets and tricks that you've done in the organization that's, you know, above and beyond of what you've been discussing around your talent development in the organization, but are there other things that sort of have really led to you sort of being absolutely customer centric?
Yeah, for us, we've just noticed that some other kind of customer service providers kind of miss that mark. And yeah. I think for us in particular, it's all about project delivery. And for us, you know, we're creating a home for someone. So whether that'll be someone's residence, an office where not so much now, but before you used to spend a lot of time in the office and that was your kind of workplace, your home, hotel accommodation, club lounge or classroom. It's all your kind of home. You're spending hours there. So we want to create that kind of space and offer that bespoke level of service during that journey. So that's really, really important to us. So achieving that high level of service really involves that kind of investing in staff and adapting and adopting to create those kind of continuous improvement goals across the line. So we're just continuously improving our service offer.
Have you sort of seen, you know, over the last couple of years, your customers sort of changed, the demographic of your customers sort of changed because of the pandemic? And has that had an impact on customer service as well?
Well, to be honest, David, so we're seeing quite a lot of flow into Singapore, that kind of inward investment into Singapore from overseas. So despite what's going on, so we've seen a number of banking organisations pull staff down into Singapore from Hong Kong, and which has been quite interesting. We've also seen like a huge churn in like business in property. So many of our clients are restacking their existing space mainly to accommodate, like, you know, safe measures. due to the pandemic. Some others restacking because they actually want to maximise the staff. So we've got to try and do that in a safe manner. Also, people taking the opportunity to downsize. So we're seeing reinstatement work. And we're also seeing opportunities where people are leaving their space and moving to brand new premises. So for us, it's been a really, really busy time. And I think with the manpower shortage at the moment, because there's been no kind of incoming new replenishing workers coming in, and there's been a number leaving, that's been quite a challenge for us as an industry. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, no, it's great to hear your insights there. Just finally, before I sort of move on to Aicha, but in your, I'm really keen to just sort of delve into a little bit more of your submission, because you mentioned how 8Build are environmentally responsible and ensuring that your projects have sort of a minimum impact on the environment. This is particularly pertinent as we've just come out of COP26 in the UK. And I'm just really keen to hear from you, Andy, about why this is important to you, why this is important to 8Build, and in relation to the award entry, why you feel it's important for your clients as you're so customer centric.
Yeah, good point. So for us, it's important as a business for sure, but I think it's fair to say most important for the greater good, you know, for the planet. So, but it's quite hard for us to change design. So for us, a lot of the work we do is being designed by others. So it's almost trying to get involved at that early stage as best we can. Considering we're a contractor, often that's quite hard, but we see so much waste in the industry. And at the end of the day, we're kind of just humble builders, right? So just in our humble building experience, we see quite a few mistakes at the highest level of decision-making. This might be a bit controversial. So like landlords demanding full reinstatements of premises, you know, it's quite often we see, because we go in and reinstate an office, which is basically stripping out what's there and then reinstating it back to the developer's specs. So like an empty box. And quite often we then go back into that same building and strip out what someone else or we've actually done to take that to the next level of design for someone to move in. So it's really criminal how we see things just get skipped straight away, having not even been used. So that's one level of thing. That's one level that we really see. And yeah, it's quite disheartening. Also just poor design that doesn't really reflect sustainable products. And also just like having design input that maybe, because there's a lot of elements that you can actually move between fit outs. So like, you know, demountable partitions, certain elements of floor finishes. So for us, like, you know, getting the opportunity to input and say, look, you know, you could maybe use this or recycle fit out components for your future office if you move. Or maybe we could, you know, we've got some materials coming up from another job. If it suits you, then that might work for you as an end user. And also there's insufficient plants and equipment that could also be upgraded to, you know, through some proper meaningful investment that could probably be a bit more efficient in terms of running costs. But we always try to promote, so the BCA run this green marketing initiative for sustainable properties. That's something we always promote. It's a big thing for us, and we do try our best to promote sustainable construction.
Oh, superb. And I know an organisation very well that you helped to recycle most of their previous office when they moved and reinstate everything in a very good way as well. No, super. Andy, really great to talk to you. Thank you so much. And congratulations again on winning the Customer Service Provider of the Year award. It's a really, really, really impressive achievement.
No, thank you, David. And thanks to everyone at BritCham for the opportunity. It's been really great. Thank you.
No, superb. Aicha, congratulations for Arup being announced as the winner of the Diversity and Inclusion Champion of the Year Award, another really, really important award too. And thank you for joining us on this podcast today. Can we just start with sort of a bit of overview of sort of Arup and why you entered the Business Awards in the first place?
Hi, David. It's a great pleasure to be here as the D&I Champion of the Year. And thanks for the opportunity to be here, actually. Arup is a multinational professional services firm dedicated to sustainable development. And we are a collective of 16,000 designers, advisors, and experts working across 140 countries. So we are over 50 years old in Singapore, and we have about 450 staff helping shaping iconic and impactful projects in the built environment. For many years, Arup has been delivering many internal activities and strategies to develop ourselves in the diverse and inclusion space. and winning or even being shortlisted for a very prestigious business award is a public way of recognizing the hard work and achievements of our staff. It also certifies our place within the industry when we are judged by the industry leaders and experts in this field. And being in competition in such an environment was thrilling and at the same time gave us the opportunity to look at our business from a different perspective and helped us to identify our strengths and areas where we should develop ourselves and shift our focus to.
Oh, super. And D&I, diversity and inclusion, might mean something different to different size organizations. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on why D&I is so important with you at Arup?
So I think to start with, Arup is a very diverse and continually evolving organization with a rich history of human values and beliefs from its founding days that underpin its business. Diversity is part of Arup's DNA as we work at the global level across our 89 offices and where our people reflect the societies we work in. Our Singapore office alone is composed of 28 nationalities, actually. And inclusion is a core value at Arup, as we are, and is where we can grow and bring out the potential of our people in their work. Our founder of Arup has addressed the importance of diversity and more importantly, the inclusion of all our people, no matter what their backgrounds are. He emphasized how important this was to our work and well-being in his iconic key speech, made to set out the firm's directions and values in the 1970s. Today, we continue to live by the philosophies that our founder established and embed these core values to our business. Our values are not simply another set of corporate values to us. They are actually integral to the firm's founding and existence. Guided by them across the Arup world, our people live it out and using their skills and expertise to reach for greater goals and become better people. And one of the unique aspects of Arup is that we are an employee-owned business. It means we are actually the bosses of ourselves. So people are the keystone of our business success in its actual form. So our people comes first in every decision we make, and their well-being, mental health, and safety are the first priority to us. And these traits are really not possible to achieve if a person does not feel like they belong to the team or the culture where he or she works every day and spends the most of their time.
Oh, super. So super. Really, really great to hear that sort of embedding throughout your organization as well. And I think last year you launched a call it out program within the Singapore office. I'm really keen to hear a little bit more about the principles about that and what's the reception been like inside your organization for your employees?
Yeah, we have actually put this program quite a while ago and actually up to date, we have about 150 people, which is making roughly about 40% of our staff. Participated to these workshops. And this is not even mandated. It is all voluntary attendance so far. And we actually aim to make it to mandatory level at some point because we believe that calling it out will make it much easier to notice inappropriate behaviors and language around us. So as our office leader puts it, when mutual respect and understanding in the workplace are present, trust is established and the spirit of synergy and innovation starts to flourish. And our workshops aim to address some of the topics such as how to call out negative behaviors, how to enable Arup where everyone feels valued and included, recognizing bullying, sexual harassment, discrimination, and negative behaviors, addressing precursor behaviors that, if left unchecked, can become harassment, discrimination, and bullying. And so far, we actually have been checking in with our staff. See their feedback, and over 98% of the staff felt that the workshops were very good and useful in reinforcing and outlining strategies to identify and address issues. We believe if our people are saviors at recognizing inappropriate behaviors to themselves or to those around them, and more importantly, can call it out in a constructive manner, this will lead to a more inclusive culture where the staff will understand that there is zero tolerance at Arup for such behavior. And with more and more embedding the calling it out in the Arup culture, we also expect that subtle issues, microaggressions will become more obvious to recognize as they will not be part of the norm or day-to-day conversations.
Oh, super, super, superb to hear that. Really great. I think it's sort of helping employees to feel safe as well in the work environment, I think is really good. And you talked about people come first. People come first to Arup. As a global organization, you talked about your scale and, you know, across the, you know, 100 plus countries. How do you manage the varying levels of inclusiveness reflected in lots of different cultures where you operate geographically? How do you manage all of that?
I think, again, it all comes to our very first foundation and philosophies, because Arup has always adopted a human-centric approach in its business and work culture. And this allows us naturally to adopt that essential requirements for an inclusive environment, such as being respectful to each other and fair treatment for all as one of the essential requirements. And Arup values of humanity, excellence, value to society and respect, more than just being a list of values, they represent common values that all can associate with regardless of background. They are lighthouse values to internalize in our own ways and guide us by what they represent. And in line with that above understanding, we made 9 global commitments to inclusion as a way of ensuring we build equity into everything we do. And in doing so, we engaged an equitable design expert to work along with our own D&I specialists. So we covered an extent of commitments from leadership, thriving, learning, clarity, clients, work, future talent, influence, and measurement. So these commitments are published also on our website and stretch beyond how we behave inside Arup. They look so, make sure the projects we do, the clients we work with, and the communities that we influence all create a more inclusive world too. And the diversity of our people is central to our success, as I mentioned. Arup's inclusion commitments are leading to an Arup that gives all our people a voice. Through the delivery of commitments globally, Arup members will embrace a charter which is explicit about how we show care and respect for one another.
Just sort of picking up on that global scale as well. I mean, do you think it's easier or harder for an MNC to adopt good DI practices, or you know, as compared to sort of maybe micro or smaller businesses? I mean, do you think there are sort of challenges for different size organizations, and how advantageous is it for all businesses to create a well-rounded and varied culture?
I think it's important, both important and advantageous for all scale of businesses to create a well-rounded and varied culture, whether it is an MNC or an SME. And actually, one of the quotes that we are, again, our founder, O'Arup, outlines the importance of the people that we believe by those philosophies, as I mentioned, with those values, and key speech is the heart to our foundation of our company. And in his quote, he mentions, no matter how wonderful an organization we can devise, its success depends on the people working in it and for it. So it's actually, like, as I said, embedded in the culture of our lives in Arup, and the reflection of the society we work in, the diversity of thoughts, the perspectives, are a proven method of achieving success and thriving in what we do. And in addition to diversity, inclusion of the diverse background of people is the key to success for organizations. So if people actually, if they feel belong and that they think that their unique talents matter and their individual needs are cared by their colleagues or their leaders in their day-to-day experiences, they actually will flourish. And when organizations practice that very humane act of acknowledgement, inclusion, empathy, and compassion, that is when they can achieve the inclusion for all. And it's very critical for success, where workplaces today are more diverse and globally connected than ever before.
Oh, superb. And before we welcome sort of Yun Hang, your colleague, I guess in terms of that inclusiveness and that diverse workforce, it would be remiss of me not to sort of mention gender in an industry such as construction, for example. You know, STEM's really, really important, and it's been covered by a number of the British Chamber of Commerce sort of business committees as well throughout the years. But how do you encourage, as an organisation, more people from minority groups to join your industry and stay working in that industry, keep that talent in there for a long period of time?
Yeah, it's certainly, we believe that retention is much more important than attraction. And if we attract more minority groups, but they don't feel included within the industry, then actually we have failed. For example, we could have equal representation by gender, but if women didn't feel as valued or as able to bring their creative best than men, then we haven't really succeeded. That's what we believe. And D&I is not just about the numbers, for example, for women. It's actually more about, do all our staff feel equally valued? And that has been a historic narrative that it's not always safe to be in engineering or construction if you are not a white man. And many organizations are working to change that narrative and to demonstrate that people are valued in STEM roles regardless of their human identity. And one way we can support changing this narrative is to help teachers and parents understand the benefits of working in this industry. It's often teachers and parents who guide someone's entry into or away from STEM. And we do, for example, some STEM activities in our company for the past, I think, 5-6 years now, together with UN Women. And before that, it was UN United Women Singapore for nonprofit organizations, where we bring actually these high school students into our company and change their perspective, change their lens to look at that STEM areas and give them that flavor of experience, taste in our company, where they actually work for a few weeks and help us to do our actual works. And so far, it has been quite well. Due to pandemic, there is a bit of course, disconnect, but we want to go back to that as soon as we are back to normal. And again, another important thing that we believe is talent retention lies with how well the contributions, presence, and perspectives of different groups of people are valued and integrated into the work environment and the firm's decisions. And we have looked into retaining our own people while shaping our gender strategy and race, ethnicity, and culture action plans. This is only possible by looking at the current systems, policies in place from the lens of inclusion of minority groups. Are we providing enough support to disadvantaged groups, or are we looking into equity rather than equality in the ways we develop our staff career progress? These are some of the questions we ask ourselves while drafting our strategy plans. And from, I think, gender perspective, there are many responsibilities expected from women, from taking care of the family members to household duties and chores. And it makes it much harder to keep the work-life balance at certain stages of their lives. That's where the organizations play a critical role, whether to acknowledge and address those issues and keep their female talents in the firm in their times of need or lose them, because it gets harder for them to keep work and life responsibilities at bay. And in Europe, we choose to acknowledge and address these issues and be there for our people in their times of need. As a matter of fact, I just recently actually came from Turkey, and I had that similar experience. I had a situation where I needed my company to support me. And I recently had some family health matters and had to stay there for a few months to take care of my dad, who was in a bad health shape. And when I mentioned this to my boss, I had no doubt or hesitation whether he would be responding me in any negative way. And I knew that he would give me his full support and trust to work remotely from Turkey while I take care of my familial responsibilities. And this kind of support made me firstly very grateful to the company that I'm working with for the last 15 years. And secondly, saved me from a huge amount of stress by being there with my family in the time they needed me. So I think it all boils down to, as I said, acknowledgement of these various challenges, providing the support when needed, and providing equitable career development programs, measurement of success along the way, and checking in with the staff. These are some of the approaches we adopted while tackling with the challenges for our gender portfolio.
Oh, absolutely superb. You can come on our podcast channel again, because you've just absolutely opened up a brilliant segue to your colleague, because all of those great things you've been doing with D&I, congratulations on winning the D&I award as well. But we've also got welcoming Tan Yun Heng, also from Arup, the winner of the Employer of the Year award. And Yun Heng, great to have you with us. It sounds like you've got a brilliant people strategy in place. We've just heard firsthand from one of your colleagues about the support they've had from the organization. Can you just share a little bit about your people strategy and how that's benefited the organization as well, just picking up from what Aisha just said?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I would like to thank Richem for giving the opportunity and really delightful and thrilled to win, you know, two awards. And I think Aisha has covered quite a lot, and I think there's quite a lot of gist in there. I think in terms of the people strategy, I would say that, you know, that is, you know, it sets out the values and approach, you know, for us to really put people in the center of what we do, and also setting mutual expectations and implement what we believed, you know, in so that, you know, we can celebrate our success. And in essence, right, our strength is our people. So I think ARUP is not our core values, is really a humane organization. And we really want to achieve that, you know, in so that we can let our people, you know, and want our people to flourish today as well as in the future, both, you know, physically, emotionally, and spiritually as well. So I think we have about three ideas, you know, in the people strategy, you know, is to call to action for everyone to take responsibility to be leaders, to be human, and to be ARUP. So you may be wondering, you know what, I mean, maybe I just have time to talk about one of them. What you mentioned, I mean, why you say that, no, is to be human. I think in line with a human human organization, you know, to be human is like, why is it important? I think we really need to value humanity and really bring our passion and, you know, strength as well as vulnerabilities, you know, to work. And as a firm, we know we need to ensure that our people feel safe, you know, feel included, and feel trusted. And also we want, I think one part of the be human is actually we want to focus on emotional quotient, which is EQ, and relationship. I think that is also, you know, important, you know, on the equal footing with excellence and commercial ability that normally a company will focus on. You know, because with that, you know, we can achieve the trusting and long-lasting collaboration and collective excellence and wisdom as a firm. And ultimately, you know, we really can, you know, I still remember our founder once mentioned, what binds us together is really important. And together we can create a better and shape a better outcome of what we do, you know, as a day-to-day work. So I think that is really part of the gist of the people strategy that we have.
Oh, super. I like that. Be leaders, be human, be Arab. I think I really like that. And I don't want to mention the COVID word, but I've kind of gone and got to, because it has changed the way that we worked, right? And, you know, employers have always, you know, over the last couple of years have had to adapt to those higher EQ needs, a bit more of that pastoral care that you've mentioned as well. It has affected sort of employees' mental health and growth opportunities and relationships that we hold through working from home and working differently. How have you addressed the challenges over the last couple of years at ARUP, and how have you been supporting your employees more broadly?
Yeah, I think as a firm, you know, it's important to acknowledge that, you know, the past 18 months during the COVID has been a great challenge. You know, even the most robust people of us, right, you know, have some difficulty as well, have some difficult moments as well. I think well-being is incredibly delicate and also subjective, I would say. And what makes someone tick doesn't mean that it will be, you know, the same solution can be for another person. So I think in ARUP, we strive to cater for the breadth and depth of the experience through multiple resources, support, and help. Maybe, for example, we have launched a Caring for Our People campaign, you know, with different wellness themes. And then, for example, in November, we asked everyone to have a social media detox. So we try to not avoid social media, or sometimes we promote new ideas to reduce the screen time and all these things. And not on top of that, we also try to enable our leaders to train them to how to make sure that the well-being of the team is ensured, and going through certain dialogues or even training and role-playing, so that all of us know how to manage the kind of situation. And the second example I could talk about is, you know, we have a weekly flex model that actually create a working environment that allow everyone to integrate their work and personal life, as well as the needs of the business together. I think that is really powerful. Flexibility is really powerful in this time and during COVID or during everything going forward as well. I think the hybrid working, you know, a lot of things are actually needing the kind of flexibility. And actually we launched this weekly flex model so that we really enable people to plan their life, plan their work, as well as deliver what they want to achieve, and it inspire them to pursue some interests as well. I think the third example I could bring along is that we have established a newly partnership with Unmind. You know, it's a global mental health and well-being app that actually provides courses, tools, and resources to help people to manage maintain and also improve their mental health. So it's a kind of a self-help without any pressure, as well as no confidentiality issue as well. So I think that is, we always believe that we need to make sure that people know how to take care of themselves. That is really important, and they have the tools and support that they need to achieve that.
Oh, really, really strong message there, Yunheng, as well. You mentioned this sort of the last 18 months have been really difficult. I think you know, we've started to see people think about their careers, start thinking about maybe a career shifting, moving, relocating. And we keep hearing this sort of the great resignation phrase. Is it here? Is it coming? How are companies dealing with it? How should they deal with it? And I just sort of also mentioned around the importance of retention of staff as well. Attraction is really important, but about retaining sort of good talent. And when talent is so mobile, how important it is for organizations to be flexible and provide those sort of additional opportunities in order to retain your best talent?
I think I would like to think about the great resignation and opportunity as well, because I think instead of thinking of attrition, I think we need to think about attraction. And attraction doesn't mean just recruitment, but I think the attraction is continuous process to make sure that people stay within the company. And that is really important, I would say. And during this pandemic time, I think people need to feel more valued as well as trust. I think it kind of like, you know, build upon that, you know, so that ensure that people are appreciated, and we must show our gratitude all times, you know, and make sure that people are best well taken care of and also can perform their best and to the full potential. And I think the last part of it is, you know, I would say that, you know, employee, you know, will actually focus equally on the work and personal responsibilities so that they can really have a so-called freedom as well as autonomy to make sure that their life and work is in harmony. I think that is the future of work that we actually need to ensure that everyone, you know, will stay on that.
Oh, no, really, really, really great to hear that, Yunheng. And, you know, it is about the workplace, isn't it? Of course it is. But you've got a really interesting sort of community engagement committee as well, which was sort of there to demonstrate sort of social usefulness in action. How did you sort of bring that about? And sort of what's the overall impact been for your employees?
I think the main message here is, I would say that doing good and the ability to help others actually also boost our well-being in a way. Yeah, I think in Arab, you know, we have many programs as well as many projects that actually delivered, you know, during the 2020 to 2021. Actually, we have about 200 projects over across 40 countries that we actually globally delivered to serve the communities and make a difference. Now, using our skills and expertise, I think we need to make the meaningful and also purposeful community engagement, because I think we want to use our skills and expertise to help others, you know, so that we can make a difference to other people's life. And that this kind of programs really help our people as well as the communities, and that actually serves the core values of us, you know, being socially useful. I think that is really interesting programs. And I think just to give a few examples in Singapore, what we have done, I think we have done a few fundraising projects for the India COVID Solidarity Fund. And also we did the pro bono input to the modular pod homes for the homeless. And then that is a perfect example that we use our skill on built environment to design, you know, modular pod homes for the homeless. And also, I think the more recent one, I think we want people to be active, to stay active as well. And we actually have a staff fundraising for the WaterAid, Walk for Water event, and actually, you know, getting everybody to stay fit and healthy, and at the same time doing the charity as well as donate to the people who need it the most. I think the main thing is really, you know, we need to recognize that ability to help others and you can do good is really a powerful well-being booster for everyone and during this period.
Sounds incredibly powerful. And just last question before I bring sort of Andy and Aicha back in before we close, but it sounds like you've got a really, really positive company culture inside Arab. It sounds, you know, some really great initiatives. Have you got any sort of top tips or advice for our businesses that might be listening that might be struggling to see that as a priority? Have you got sort of a couple of sort of nuggets of information that we can share across the wider community around why positive company culture is so important?
Yeah, I think well factors such as profit, quality, and excellence are important for business. I think what is really important for us is the great people culture must not be overlooked in the quest of success. And there are really no excuse for behaving badly or to humiliate others. And these are the really important human factors and human culture that we really need to make sure that it's ingrained into our positivity in the firm. So I think, I still remember one of the quite a long quote from our founder, Sir Ulf Rarup, once said that an organization which is human and friendly, despite being large and efficient, where every member is treated not only as a link in a chain of command or a wheel in a bureaucratic machine, but as a human being whose happiness is the concern of all. So I think this is really important to us, and it really needs to circulate back to the people strategy, and the people is the essence. In essence, people is the strength of our firm. And I think it's applicable to most of the firms as well. It's really, a firm is nothing without their people. And approaching this, with an attitude of gratitude, trust, and respect is really what we really need to make sure that and make a firm a success.
Oh, superb. Once again, congratulations, Yuen Heng, for Arup's award of winners of our Employer of the Year award. It's been great to hear some of those initiatives. Just bringing also Andy and Aicha back into the conversation. Andy, perhaps I'm going to you first. Really keen to hear about, what did it feel like to win the award? Okay, yes, it was online, but we did, it was live. It was a real life experience. Sort of, what did it feel like to win the award, and why should people think about entering next year?
Yeah, for us, despite not being maybe at the Shangri-La, it was brilliant. I mean, we're at home, we had the family around me, and just getting the challenger announcing the award and the winner, it was brilliant. It's a really good experience and a good chance, and just seeing everyone's reaction on screen. So for us, it's good. But yeah, I would definitely promote people entering. For us winning this, it's given us great recognition. So we do so many presentations to our future clients when we're pitching for work, and to be able to showcase this has been brilliant. Particularly the title and what we've won is particularly really, really good. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Oh no, really excellent. And were your staff happy as well? I mean, how was the feeling inside organization the day after?
Yeah, so obviously we had the usual kind of WhatsApp group, and that was pinging away as soon as it was really good. So there was a bit of banter and lots of video recording, and that was sent around to everyone. So yeah, despite being everyone remote, it was still good. And when we have met up in the office, because we're kind of on staggered start, but when we have met up, it's good to have that kind of feedback and from everyone. It's been great. Thank you.
Oh, superb. Thanks, Andy. And once again, congratulations. Aicha, what about yourself? What did it feel like on the night to win the award, and why should people enter next year?
It was perfect organization. It wasn't, yes, in person, but it gave actual feelings of excitement, happiness, and the proud moment that my eyes got teary. I was so excited to come, and I honestly was like, I know we were doing a lot in this area, but I didn't think, because we have really strong competitors, and I really didn't know if we would win it. And it was like, I still feel, again, I get goosebumps. I still feel that proud moment that we won this D&I Champion of the Year award. We have been working very hard, and it's a great recognition in the space in Singapore, where all the prestigious businesses are watching this event. It's really great public recognition for anyone who would like to enter this award. And I definitely would recommend anyone who would like to be recognized as one of those biggest prestigious awards should enter to this contest. And it was a great experience, and it was thrilling for me.
Oh, superb and great to hear it. And clearly, as the Diversity and Inclusion Committee leader at Arup, clearly making a very big impact from what we've heard as well.
We immediately messaged to our D&I committee of our award, and everybody was so excited, and the whole day was like a celebratory type of, you know, moment for us. And I couldn't, I think, get over the feeling for the next 2 days. It took me about 2 days to get over that excitement. It's really a great, you know, platform. I cannot imagine the physical event, how it would be. Online event was superb already.
Actually, just jumping back in, David. So yeah, what Aicha said was really a good point. It was really professionally run. That was another thing. That was really well done. Asia Works and, you know, the whole professional, like, you know, because it must be quite difficult, the technology in itself. But actually waiting for the award in that waiting room was pretty nerve-wracking, even though you're kind of remote. Yeah. and you're like a window in the whole announcement. So yeah, it still captured the moment, you know. So for us, it was brilliant.
Oh, that's really good to hear. We should probably get Asia Works on to talk about how we actually ran that, because it was a feat of engineering, to be honest, in the background with lots going on there as well. So I'm really, really, really pleased you enjoyed it.
And probably nerve-wracking for everyone, I'm sure.
Yeah. Please, internet, please stay consistent.
Yeah, exactly.
Really important. Really good. And Yunheng, you know, how did you feel when you won the winners of? Let me start that again. And Yunheng, how did it feel when you were announced as winners of the Employer of the Year award? How did it feel for you, and why should people enter next year?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting, and I remembered when we attend, I attend with Aicha, and we thought we will win one of them, but it was really thrilled to know that we won both, and that was really really a good great recognition to us, and immediately I was thinking we have to really celebrate this, and immediately I was saying okay, I must send something personal to the committee and to the people who have actually helped. I think the recognition and gratitude is really important. I think that is the team that actually come together and work together, and the people that we have that contributed to this. And of course, I know we need to break the news to our region as well as global. I think that's really exciting for all of us, having worked very hard on this fund. Yeah.
Oh,
thanks, good chairman. And I think actually I learned a lot from the organization as well of the hybrid or the virtual award, because we also have our celebration award, you know, for the 10 years, you know, anniversary for people, and 25 years, 35 years. So I think these are the new trend, and it's really well done. Thank you. Thanks for showing that as well. Maybe we can learn a few things from you guys as well.
Oh, Aicha, Andy, Yunheng, thank you so much. It's been great to hear about, you know, your successes and your awards today, and delve a little bit deeper and understand sort of why you won them, because there's some amazing stories that we've covered today. And it's all been about people, which has been magnificent. So thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for sharing across our network and for our listeners your success stories. It's really brilliant to hear that across the business community. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. As always, don't forget to subscribe and rate our channel on Spotify, Apple, Google, and all other podcast platforms. For more information about the Chamber, please visit www.britcham.org.sg.